Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ABA Law Practice Division podcast. I am your host for today, Kathy Gishtaspi. I am a securities lawyer, and I am a founder of a consulting firm, Purist Consulting, where we work with lawyers and law firms on creating authentic brands by allowing their lawyers to be authentic humans and bring their best self to work every day. And that oftentimes involves diversity and letting people acknowledge who they are so that they can feel like they are included and belong. And then we see firms flourish that way. And that's what we're here to talk about with my guest today. My guest is a friend of mine who I've known for a very long time, Rhonda Grayson. She is Talent Acquisition Director at Rimon Law. And if you don't know Rimon, I'm going to let Rhonda tell you about it, but it's a fantastic structure of a law firm. And so welcome, Rhonda.
Thank you, Kathy.
So tell us a little bit about your role, how you got there, and anything that you think would be helpful to the conversation about Rimon Law.
Sure. So I've been in the legal administration space for over 20 years. In various roles, including marketing, recruitment, a lawyer recruitment, and of course, what we're going to talk about, DEIB, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. And then I've also done some coaching for law students and also for attorneys in transition. I came to this position because I thought I was semi-retired. I had relocated from San Diego to Dallas to be closer to family, and I was kind of doing, you know, my own thing, but I heard about Rimon, and the more that I talked to people at Rimon about this distributed model, the more I became intrigued. It is definitely the future of law. It makes more sense than I can even tell you. I think lots of firms are thinking about how they can do things differently, be more efficient, streamline their efforts. But our model was founded this way 15 years ago. And our founders, Michael Marasta and Yakov Silberman, actually had the idea that a law firm could be run very streamlined, the way that tech companies do, with all of the costly overhead, without all of the things that make lawyers grimace and allow them to practice the way that they want to and serve their clients better.
And it's been working out.
It's been working out.
And really quickly, for those of you who are not familiar with that structure, we're not here to talk about the structure of the firm. You can go to my podcast. I did a two-part series with Juan Zuniga, who is the managing partner of Rimon Law, to get all the skinny on that. But here, just to give some context to what Rhonda's saying, there are no billable requirements.
Correct.
And the firm doesn't dictate pricing either. So it allows for collaboration and transparency and autonomy, and allows entrepreneurial lawyers to find their way there. And so, and it's virtual. I mean, it's a hybrid model, but did I summarize it well, Rhonda?
Yeah, we're a hybrid model.
Yeah.
So if you want to work in Paris, Texas, or Paris, France,
you did your pick. So Rhonda was on my podcast interview, part one with Juan. And, you know, you said something about being intentional on how all your lawyers belong, feel like they belong in the firm. And that made me think that it's a very important topic. And so I want to kind of start with, what trends are you seeing in the diversity space over the years, because you've been involved in it in so long, and Rhonda and I know each other because we were both on the board of a national organization called Women of Color in the Law. And then besides the trends, what do you see as obstacles to diversity in any law firm model necessarily? And maybe you can address your own as well.
Sure. As far as trends, when I first started working in this space, we were only talking about the D. We were only talking about diversity. We were talking about counting. We were talking about data. We were talking about pipeline. Those are the things that we were talking about. And we were beginning to talk about creating welcoming environments for diverse individuals. Over the years, and it's wonderful that these things have happened, there have been, you know, several organizations that have emerged, such as LCLD, which is focused on diversity in law firms and law departments, and the Diversity Lab, who put out the Mansfield Rule, which a lot of firms have been certified for. And it looks at how not only are you adding people with diverse backgrounds or underrepresented backgrounds, but what are they doing in your firm? Are they in leadership positions? Are they climbing the ladder? Are there opportunities for them? Do they feel welcome? Do they feel a sense of community, which is the belonging part? That's the feeling the community, feeling the connection, and feeling like you can bring your entire self to this space.
So how does your firm structure support this model or your model of diversity? Or maybe said a different way, how do you guys effectively use diverse DEIB to grow?
Mm-hmm. So we actually kicked off our formal diversity initiative only 1 year ago. And surprisingly, we've been able to get a few things done.
Congratulations.
One of the great things. Yeah, thank you. One of the great things is that everyone was ready. You know, people were ready for this. They were welcoming, you know, these efforts. And, you know, we've had lots of people that have said, you know, how can I get involved? We started off with...
Can I interrupt you? Can you speak a little more to, because I think it's a very important point for those listening who might be thinking the same thing. How do you know when everyone is ready?
Well, every single person will never be ready. Yeah, they won't be ready. But one of the things that is important is knowing the culture of your firm.
Very well said.
You cannot do, this is not a keep up with the Joneses initiative. You can't do everything and you can't be everything. You have to really center your efforts around the culture of your firm to figure out what is going to work. You know, doing an assessment, whether that's a listening tour or just looking at the things that have been done that have worked and people want more of, and centering on those things. Sometimes I call them low-hanging fruit, the things that are easy to get people around. And as you grow that volume of people, now you have an audience to talk about next things.
Yes, good point. So knowing your firm culture, what do you say to those people that are like, there's nothing wrong with our culture? What's there to know?
Well, it's not that there's something wrong with your culture, but you want everyone to feel welcome. You want everyone to feel like they can thrive, that they can succeed, that they can advance if advancement opportunities come their way. And that is, you know, part of the equity part, right? Making sure that not that things are necessarily equal, but that everyone has the same opportunities.
So how did you a year ago start this process? And I think you need to finish that. I interrupted you and asked you the question about quote unquote ready, but finish that thought and maybe bring in the fact that you guys are uniquely hybrid, but a lot of people work from home because you leverage technology to create Absolutely. A law firm with low overhead. So there's not a lot of real estate expense associated with it. And so the money can be used more wisely. It feels like it's harder to generate DEIB with that kind of a model, because you're not all regularly in the same place. The world is different now, and all law firms should really be thinking about that. So that's why I really want your perspective on how do you make that work?
We make it work by being intentional. There is no way to do this on this model without being intentional. We have to think about what we want to do, what we want to accomplish, not starting at the beginning, but starting at the end. Where do we want to end up? And then working our way back. We're developing our strategic plan for our DEIB initiatives and making those not just, you know, overarching things, but also granular steps that we need to take to make this environment the way that we want it to be, not just for now, 2024, but in the future as well.
So what's the first step for someone who's listening, who's in your shoes at a law firm? I don't know many that have your model, but, you know, they're working on being entrepreneurial and revolutionary. What's the first step? Did I hear you say it should be a strategic plan, or is that later in the process?
Yeah, I think knowing where your firm is, doing that assessment, whether that's talking to the leaders within your firm, finding out, you know, if there are any underlying issues that have existed, how those have been addressed. If you have offices, quote, satellite offices, which some firms have, where there are underrepresented people that feel unseen or unheard. Just taking a look at where your firm is, what you have in place. Sometimes there are things that are there that you may not know exist. Mm-hmm. Just even asking your attorneys, what types of affinity organizations or bar organizations that have a diverse bent to them are you involved with? What charitable organizations are you involved with?
So serving is kind of a sleuth, it sounds like, really digging in underneath and just getting to know people.
That is really it, getting to know people.
And, you know, that might sound like, well, of course, I can't believe I have to listen to a podcast to hear that. But listeners, stop and really think about that. How often do we, as practicing lawyers or staff, take the time to really get to know one another? And now with the remote environment, you hop on, you have a conversation, you hop off, and we all like to think, oh, well, I see that person all the time on Zoom or a remote platform. It's not the same. And so these things take effort and intention, like you said. Yeah. And so what do you say to those people that are like, well, that sounds like it takes a lot of time. We don't have the luxury of that much time. And by the way, how much time is it that's involved?
It's as much time as you want to allocate to it. it's not going to be solved by putting a few things on your website and, you know, having a speaker here and there. It's not going to be solved. And I don't necessarily think it's something to be solved, but something to create. And that's creating that environment where people can come, they can thrive, they can accomplish their goals as well. I mean, the people that do well here are very entrepreneurial. But, you know, there may be people that have thought like, I don't think I could be in a hybrid firm. Because I like to go into the office. I mean, we actually have an algorithm that matches everyone up for a virtual coffee break every month. You don't know who your match is going to be. It's a little bit of speed dating, I guess you could say. But it's always a welcome surprise. I think maybe the second month I was here, I was matched with someone in the IP group. And when I was at one of my previous firms, I did a lot of IP recruitment. And it was a delight to talk to someone from that world. And fast forward earlier this year, when we brought over several attorneys in the IP space, guess who I was calling? That very person. And I had a chance to get to know her, during that interaction.
So how does that help the diversity process too? Those coffee breaks, which sound fabulous. I hope everyone noted that. And you don't need a fancy algorithm. You just need the intention of matching people up.
Absolutely. I think what it does is it helps us see past just the photo on the website, the bio. It humanizes that name. It humanizes that bio. Now I know, oh, your daughter's in college? That's great. What's she studying? Now I know, oh, wow, you took a vacation to Vermont last year. So now I know you like to ski. I'm getting to know you as a whole person, not just the part that appears on the website.
Yeah, well said, well said. And I think that's the most important thing. The humanity of lawyering is what I call it. We came up with that name for a CLE we did at the ABA last year during Wellness Week. And it was so well attended that people said, well, where's part two? So we're doing it again. Plug for that program in May about the humanity of lawyering. And so DEIB and wellness go hand in hand with this notion of, hey, who are you? And do you know yourself well enough to be okay being matched up with somebody for coffee and bringing your real self? Or are you going to be so trapped in your head of, this is not billable, this is stupid, this hour, I'll never get it back, and this person doesn't do anything for me? So it's a mindset perspective, I think, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. And that is one of the challenges, is mindset, right?
How do you overcome that? Or how do you help lawyers overcome that to build the EIB?
I mean, a lot of it is education, educating people. When I first started, we were striving to build this business case for diversity, right? The clients want it. The lawyers need to provide it. But it's really the right thing to do, right? It's really the right thing to do. As the world is changing, as legal departments are changing, the face of those departments are changing as well. There are more women. People are working a lot longer as well. And then there are also a lot more youth that are coming up that came in at a time where diversity was very important to them. And these people are going to law school, and it's becoming even more important to them, and they're becoming lawyers. And so just because they become a lawyer, it doesn't go away.
Yeah. And who they are authentically doesn't go away. Like my background and my experiences and my gender and how I identify who I am is never going to go away. And it belongs in that atmosphere because it helps me be a better practitioner and we can serve the community and clients better. Yes. So I think
that's one area that I think that we'll see more of is people talking about the intersectionality of diversity. You know, while I might be a mixed race woman or a Black woman, I'm not just one thing. We're never just one thing, right?
Yeah, we're not. And that's the beautiful part of life. Mm-hmm. But I think we become so laser focused on how we bring home money to pay the mortgage and keep the lights on and keep the kids in school. And oh, the list grows, right? We forget we're not just one thing. And I think, as Juan said beautifully last time, practicing law is one segment of who we are.
Yes, one small segment.
When we keep the focus on diversity and the well-being of lawyers as a result, then that one segment thrives.
That's right.
So any final thoughts to share with the audience?
I think that some of the things that, like I said, will be on the horizon be the intersectionality. Given the Supreme Court striking down affirmative action, there may be some challenges in, retooling diversity initiatives. I do know that there have been a few firms that have come under fire for their law school recruitment efforts. I think focusing on this belonging and this inclusion part while we're waiting for things to settle down are good steps. We're not taking our foot off the pedal. Mm. We're just, you know, making a turn here and there until we get back on that same road.
Well, and we can create the road. I mean, just because.
Absolutely create the road.
Just because four or five people who we've tasked with that, called the Supreme Court, have a particular stake in something, does not mean they're in the weeds day to day to know what makes a thriving organization. That's not being counter to that. Let's not be rebels here and break the law because we are. But really taking the time to say, hey, I'm an individual with agency of myself and control, and I want to create a space where others can feel that way and we can all thrive. And I think that's the ultimate goal, because it's easy to get mired in the details of the politics of it and where people are going that might not be the best path for society. So yes, I concur with you. And there is a lot of intersectionality there. And people like you are making it happen. So thank you so much, Rhonda Grayson. Truly, I've known you for years, and this has been an enlightening conversation, because you and I have never had this conversation this way.
Amazing.
What we learn when we just step out of our box and get to know people, which really is the point of diversity, right?
So that is the point.
This is it in action, folks. It doesn't have to take hours and hours, just a little bit of curiosity and a willingness to say, I'm going to grow by learning from somebody else and staying curious. And that
we can't do everything, but we can do something.
Amen. Well said. So on that note, if somebody wants to get a hold of you with follow-up questions or learn more about the Ramon Law, where can they do that, Rhonda?
RamonLaw.com is our website for the firm. And my email is Rhonda, R-H-O-N-D-A, .Grayson, G-R-A-Y-S-O-N, @RamonLaw.com.
Beautiful. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your service to the practice of law and to people being able to be who they are, the freedom that creates, and the beautiful practice that creates that contributes to society being better. And until next time, as the listeners, as you're leaving us, take one little thing that Rhonda and I said, sit with it, breathe some life into it. See where your fears are around it, perhaps, or what emotions come up, and take it one day at a time, but stay self-aware and know that you are special and so is somebody else. That does not detract. It just adds, and there is a harmony there. So thanks for being our guest, and we appreciate the ABA for providing us this platform to have this conversation, and we hope everyone benefited. And until next time, Ketty G out.